on air, online, on Twitter.
Jennifer Campbell is always on.
Unfiltered, opinionated, and ready to speak her mind at a moment's notice.
This is the Jennifer Campbell Show on 570 News and Rogers TV, Cable 20.
No, there ain't nothing that I gotta prove. You think your words will make me black and blue, but I think I'm pretty with these old boots on. I think it's funny when I drink too much. You try and change me, you can go to hell. 'Cause I don't wanna be nobody else. I like the chip I got in my front teeth. And I got bad tattoos you won't believe. So kick out the jams, kick up the soul. Pour another glass of that rock and roll. Turn up the band, find the hole. Gonna lose control tonight. What do you want from me? I'm not a married.
I mean, it's always a pleasure to do this job and this show. But on these gorgeous days we've been having, there's a little spring in your step. Blame it on the sunshine, because we all know, I mean, if you're a child of the 90s, we know what happens when you blame it on the rain. That didn't end well. Remember, Polly?
You lose your Emmy for lip syncing is what happens when you blame it on the rain, right?
That's exactly what happens.
Not Emmy, sorry, whatever music.
It was an American Music Award, wasn't it?
Right, because the Emmys are television, right?
I have to confess to you, since we're having this conversation, that I'm the proud owner of a Milli Vanilli concert t-shirt from, I think, 1990, I don't know, two or three?
Yeah, I don't think I have it anymore, but one of the first cassette tapes, one of the first albums I ever bought was Milli Vanilli. It was probably second or third.
It was a great song. I still like it. I still like it. So there we go. We've spent a lot of time on music this past couple of weeks because Polly has redone our music library. So I get really excited, too, to hear what kind of music we're going to hear as we're coming in and out of commercial breaks.
So. Well, we've gone through the rotation now, so you're going to start hearing the same songs over again.
Well, but I haven't heard any Tragically Hip bumper music for myself.
Now, what song do you want?
Well, I mean, I'll take anything from the hip, really.
All right.
You know, the music of my youth. Also a little Milli Vanilli in there, too. Busy show today. Have you read a book lately? Stop for a second and kind of think about the last book you read.
Do audiobooks count? I like listening to audiobooks when I'm out walking. It allows me to, you know, kind of multitask.
I don't see why not.
There you go.
Why wouldn't they?
All right.
I mean, so you're listening to a book, a story, right? Who to blame for a steep decline, a dramatic decline in book readership? You can probably guess, but we're going to talk about that coming up in just a few minutes. Lindsay Shepherd is suing Wilfrid Laurier University, claiming attacks have rendered her unemployable in academia. So we are going to talk to her lawyer, Howard Levitt, about that. This is a extraordinarily complicated case, and I know right here, I mean, it's gained worldwide attention, and certainly here in Waterloo region, we are definitely invested, of course, because this is a story out of Wilfrid Laurier, and we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that coming up. I want to know a lot of things from Howard Levitt. A lot. And he's going to answer me like a lawyer because that's his job. Of course, he's going to do exactly what he is supposed to do. And hopefully I'll be able to do what I'm supposed to do as well. A lot of strong feelings on that case as well. So, of course, we invite you to join that conversation coming up after 9:30. I implore you to bring your phone calls to us at star 570 and at 519-570-2545 so we can continue that conversation. Parents, have you ever been a chaperone on a school trip with your kids? If you have, you're probably going to relate and laugh out loud at a dad who he went on a school trip with 60 kids and he live tweeted the entire thing. And it is so good. It is so funny. So we'll get to that for you as well. Let's start this morning at a surprise result from Doug Ford's win. There are now more women at Queen's Park, and we're joined this morning by one of our most beloved guests, Sarah Bosfeld from Chatelaine Magazine, to talk about this. Good morning.
Good morning, Jen. How are you today?
Lovely. Thank you so much. How are you doing?
Good. The sun's out here too, you know, a few hours down the road.
Yeah, you guys,
where you are.
And you're in Toronto.
Yes.
What a nasty bit of weather you guys had last night.
Oh my God, I know. There was actually a tree down in my sister's yard. So like there's like a jungle in her backyard. Now, luckily it didn't hit the house, but I think there was a little bit of tense. Is there going to be a house or a tree in my house when I get home?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. That's not a nice feeling to kind of wonder what you're going to walk into, is it? Yeah. Well, glad that you're relatively unscathed.
Yes.
So I came across your article a couple days ago, and I thought, as I do many times when I read your stuff, I thought, oh, what a glimmer of wonderful light and hope. And I have to be completely honest, a little bit of me was like, I was annoyed, like, oh God, I got to give him some kudos. But kudos we do give, because I do believe that more women at Queen's Park is a win, no matter what political party they align with.
Yeah, I think so too. So what we saw on Thursday night, that majority sweep for the Progressive Conservatives, the polls reported 49 women elected to the province's 124 ridings. And granted, there are more ridings in this election than there were in the last election. There were some new redrawings that sort of happened to align with federal jurisdictions too. But that means that now that women make up 39.5% of decision makers at Queen's Park. And prior to that, it was about 35%. So, you know, we're up about 5%. And so I agree with you that I think like women's voices around the table, given that we're 50% of the population, is a good thing no matter what your stripe. But of course, we know that the makeup, given what happened with the Liberals, is quite different in terms of the sort of party and the values that these women campaigned on and will be, and the mandate sort of course, when they end up in office, when Queen's Park sits for the first time with the new class.
Yeah. How does Ontario compare to the rest of Canada when it comes to provincial makeup in terms of gender equity?
Well, it fares fairly well. I think it's sort of higher than most. Certainly not the highest. I know that in BC there are some higher numbers there, and I think in more specific jurisdictions as well, even municipally too. But we do know that it is actually quite a decent proportion. You know, 40% is 10 points away from 50%. So you got to give Ontario kudos for that. And they're a leader in sort of a lot of ways in terms of representation.
Sorry, I was coughing there for a second. So again, obviously, like you just said, because we kind of painted the province blue, more than half of those women are PCs.
Yes.
And as much as I completely believe that a government should look like the people it represents, what kind of shift will we see then? What can we expect?
Yeah, so we know that certainly the PCs, they are adding, there's going to be 25 women in their caucus. And so we know, though, that there are 76 PC seats that were won on Thursday night. So 25 out of 76 is still not great. That's like a third.
Right.
So it's, but at the same time, it's a lot more conservative women, and they did run the lowest proportion of women during the election, 32% women candidates. There were more Liberals, obviously, when they were in office. But interestingly, the New Democrats, they ran 56% women candidates during the election, and they came out with 40 seats in the end. And so actually 20 of those seats are women. So that's actually, they've achieved parity sort of on the opposition bench, which is interesting. But in terms of what it will look like for conservative women, I don't think women are not an analogous sort of homogenous group that all think and vote and, have views that are the same. We certainly know that. And so it's not like just because they're women, we're going to see tons of, new policies for women or a lot of fighting for women. I think a lot of it more has to do with the party and the party's mandate and their focus. And so the women are going to be just as focused on the economy as the men, you know. But at the same time, I think what we saw through some of those earlier scandals with the conservatives, and I mean provincially and federally, you know, is that it really matters to have women around the table. You know, and I think more about the federal jurisdiction in this sense. There was the Rick Dykstra case where he was running to be. They were trying to decide at the high level in Ottawa whether he should be a candidate. And he had been subject to a police report by a young woman who claimed sexual assault. And so, you know, there was Jenny Byrne around the table, who's a high level conservative, you know, campaign organizer, and she was like, come on, we gotta, like, this is a problem. You know, we can't have this. And you know, and she got overrode. And so I think, you know, having more women around the table, though, you know, having those voices kind of speak up and really speak from that woman's perspective and make sound judgment, you know, I think that matters. And I wish that it had made a difference in that case, but that was years ago now. But I think we've learned from that a little bit. I hope so anyway. So that kind of thing, you know, and Doug Ford certainly has a lot of senior women around him. He's going to give, he's expected to give cabinet positions to Christine Elliott, of course, who narrowly lost the leadership to him, you know, back in the winter, and Carolyn Mulroney as well, who's a rookie, but ran an impressive, you know, leadership campaign of her own. And then certainly Lisa McLeod, who's in an Ottawa area MPP, who's been around a long time. So these are strong women. These are opinionated women. These are women with principles, too. So it will be interesting to see what happens.
And as mentioned in the article at chatelaine.com, you talk about the women's rights activism background of many of the women elected by the NDP. So that mm-hmm. official opposition will be very vocal, we hope, in holding Ford and the PCs, you know, to account on the issues of gender equality, sexual violence and such.
Yeah, I hope so, because there has been, you know, say what you will about Kathleen Wynne, she really was an advocate for preventing and responding to sexual violence. She ran a campaign, It's Never Okay, really talking about changing some of the thinking around consent and around how we navigate these issues in our culture. And I think, you know, when I interviewed Andrea Horvath before the election day, I asked her what the NDP sort of planned to do with that kind of, you know, everything that Kathleen Wynne's government had done on that front. And so she was, you know, we wouldn't fix anything that's not broken. And I think she really actually did say we'd like to see more funding for women's organizations because they don't get enough. And, you know, but then, post-election day, you know, I am hearing from, you know, violence against women organizations that are concerned that in the history, funding and support for these efforts, these vital efforts to save women's lives, has been kind of seen as dispensable. And so, you know, I hope that Andrea Horvath's NDP, as the opposition, will fight to maintain some of that funding as Ford tries to find his efficiencies and really fight hard to say, look, this is women's lives. This is, you know, women and girls' safety. This is also important for boys and men. And so, you know, I think, you know, it's just crystal balling right now to be able to say,
it is, yeah,
you know, what he would do. But at least I do believe the NDP on the opposition is interested in fighting for that.
Our guest is Sarah Bosfeld, senior writer from Chatelaine. We're talking about her piece in Chatelaine, Surprise Result from Doug Ford's Win. There are now more women at Queen's Park. Let's talk about the sex ed curriculum. If we can, what,
sure.
I mean, again, we're totally crystal balling, mm-hmm. here, but I mean, I respect Caroline Mulroney and Christine Elliott. And I would hope that, that they are going to be vocal about this as well when it comes to the education of our children.
Yeah. And I admit I didn't follow super closely during the leadership race about sort of what they said about that. I confess, but at the same time, you know, Ford has said he will repeal that curriculum. But even if he does, I do hope that they would build something that still, you know, has components that help protect kids and help equip them for the future. But I know that is something that, you know, progressive activists are very concerned about, because learning about consent when you're young in school is something that, you know, equips you for the future in their view. And You know, and I think the social conservatives are more concerned about, you know, the gender education that they get, trans issues, you know, being taught that homosexuality is okay. You know, so who knows what a new iteration of the sex ed would look like. I think there is a concern, though, that if he repeals it right away, you know, that leaves teachers and educators in limbo, you know, that it's not like they're going to have a new one brand, you know, ready to go. Like what they promised is to do more of a consultation. And I certainly know, based on who's been advocating for this, you know, repealing of the sex ed, you know, they're going to hear a lot from social conservative parents who don't like those things that we just talked about and want them out of the curriculum. But I do hope that they also listen to more progressive parents. Like, you know, Doug Ford says, and you got to take him at his word, I guess, when he made his victory speech, that he plans to govern for all Ontarians. And he knows that, you know, social conservatives are not all Ontarians. And so he really needs to live up to that language that he's put out there.
Sarah Bosfeld from Chatelaine Magazine, it's always such a pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. It's always so nice of you to have me on. Thank you.
Take care. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye. I saw something yesterday making the rounds on social media, and I just really liked it a lot, and I want to read it to you. It's from someone named Matt Moreland. He is from Hamilton. We have some mutual friends, but I can't really see into his profile because privacy settings are a good thing. But I did see that this was shareable. So I want to read this to you because I think sometimes people put into words and articulate our thoughts better than we do. And that's kind of what we, it's kind of what resonates, isn't it? Anyway, let me just read this to you because I think it, I think it's helpful. And this is what Matt Moreland wrote, and it has got quite a few shares into the thousands now. He writes, I think the part that hurts the most when my right-leaning friends and family talk about the PCs winning from a taunting position, as though they won the game and have successfully dashed our dreams in a way they perceived we wished to dash theirs. I would just like to clarify, I never wanted Doug Ford to lose because I wanted you to lose. Wanted you to lose. I never wanted an NDP government so my friends and family would pay more tax and have less money to live their lives to the fullest. I was advocating for leftist policies because they serve marginalized communities, the poor, the sick, the elderly, and all of our children more than they serve me personally. I don't need a tax cut. I don't need cheaper gas. I don't need cheaper hydro. I don't need more money in my pocket at the expense of public health care, affordable child care, rent control, protected lands, and human rights. I wasn't voting NDP for me. Frankly, as an able-bodied, straight, white male working in the tech industry with no kids and enough income to chip away at my student loan, hopefully in time for me to buy a house in my mid-30s, Ford's ideas and policies only aim to serve my pockets and help me get ahead. The thing is, I'm already ahead. I have been ahead and will continue to be ahead in this society. I'm hurt because I'd rather take a little more money from my pocket if it meant putting it towards those who need it more than I do. So please save me the games and the jokes. You didn't beat me at anything, as your vote kept me just as privileged and fortunate as it has kept you. Your sense of victory stands directly on the backs of those less fortunate than you or I will ever be able to truly understand. That is from Matt Moreland, a post that has gone quite viral and very shareable as well. People were desperately trying to post that to their Facebook fan pages and their social media accounts. Yes, Polly, we got to go. How come nobody's reading any books? Steep decline in book readership. Who's to blame? I think you can probably guess. We'll tell you next on 570 News.
When extreme weather hits, count on the 570 Extreme Weather Center, exclusively on 570 News.
Yes, Polly! It's on at night. I'm sorry. I do that a lot. I mean, it's a good song. I stand by it. Okay. You can't blame this on the rain. I'm going to go add that to my Apple Music FYI later. And my fiance is going to just have a field day with it. But I don't care. A good song is a good song. Who to blame for a dramatic decline in book readership. Now, this was a study in Germany, and they say that the number of people buying books in Germany plummeted by 18% between 2013 and 2017. The dramatic decline can be blamed on, because we always need somebody to blame. Somebody has, if I know anything from my children, it's always someone's fault. Yeah, it's Netflix. That's why the novels on your nightstand are gathering dust. It is Netflix. Binge-worthy television exerts a great appeal and is frequently replacing books as a pastime. I'm guilty. I love books. I have many on my nightstand, but I think I absolutely have to confess that I've gone from mostly reading for pleasure at different times during the day to just reading before bed, which leads me to fall asleep with a book in my hand quite frequently and then wake up and think, I have absolutely no idea what happened in those last eight pages. No idea. And if you're looking for something a little summery, just kind of scandalous, not, you know, all that thought-provoking, I'm reading a book right now called The Marriage Pact, and it's good. It's not going to make your brain bigger, but it might keep you up at night. It is 9:28. We have a conversation coming up that I think will be very, very exciting to have. Lindsay Shepherd is suing Wilfrid Laurier University, claiming attacks have rendered her unemployable in academia. We will recap who Lindsay Shepherd is and what that situation was at Wilfrid Laurier in case you haven't heard of it. I dare say in this neighborhood or in this city, it's almost impossible that you haven't yet. But we'll talk to her lawyer, Howard Lovett, coming up about Lindsay Shepherd's case against Wilfrid Laurier University. First to the newsroom, next on 570 News.
You can watch dash cam videos from Russia all day, or put some actual news in your news feed. Click on 570news.com or go to your app store and download the 570 News app.
A lot of raucous debate on our next topic this morning on one of the great local Facebook groups that I belong to happily. It is called Next Gen Waterloo Region. And a lot of the members this morning discussing the case of Lindsay Shepherd in depth. And it was pointed out in the thread of conversation that this is, it's a touchy subject here in Waterloo Region, to be sure. And a lot of us are really, we're very much invested in this. So far, I think the conversation has been respectful and definitely polarizing. I know that's kind of it's got a bit of a buzzword these days, polarizing, isn't it? But certainly people are very passionate about Lindsay Shepherd and her case. So let's just recap here for you in case you have been living, I don't know, at Han's house and haven't heard of this case. Lindsay Shepherd is the teaching assistant who rose to prominence after she was controversially disciplined for showing her class a TV Ontario program with Jordan Peterson, Dr. Jordan Peterson. A whole other show right there. A program that he was on about gender neutral pronouns. She's now suing Wilfrid Laurier University, two professors, and a manager of the school's diversity and equity office, claiming harassment, intentional infliction of nervous shock, negligence, and constructive dismissal. She says the attacks on her have rendered her unemployable in academia and forced her to abandon her career plans for further graduate studying and teaching. The lawsuit is for $3.6 million. It was filed Tuesday in Waterloo. And we are joined this morning by Howard Levitt, who is Lindsay Shepherd's lawyer. Good morning to you, sir. Thanks for coming on with us.
Well, thanks for having me. What thread is it you were talking about?
It is a closed group. It's called Next Gen Waterloo Region. So you do have to be admitted into the group, and it is mostly women's issues. I'll read you the description just so I can make sure we're perfectly clear. The description of the group is Next Gen Waterloo Region is a grassroots collective of progressive-minded citizens working together to build stronger connections in our community through education and advocacy. We gather together, we learn from each other. Together, we'll be a force for positive change in Waterloo Region. And I should probably have one of the founding members of the group on to talk about exactly what the mandate is. Her name is Karen Sheehan. She was a politician here in town. She's a very good panelist on this radio station. And I believe, just to be clear, that this group was formed either during or in response to the American election a couple years ago. So,
okay,
obviously, Howard, this is a group
close
of
close to me. Close to
well,
me.
You can absolutely ask to join the group. It's a large amount of members. It wasn't vetted. I wasn't vetted. They let me in quite easily, and there are amazing discussions that happen in there. So, absolutely, give it a try, sir.
And it's not gender exclusive. Is that what you're telling me?
No, it's not gender exclusive at all. No, there are many. Right. No, not at all. I will say that, of course, and not all of them. Many of the issues absolutely are women's issues, but certainly not all of them. And there are discussions, great discussions that happen there all the time. See, now I'm looking at it and I'm supposed to be talking to you.
Well, but I asked you about it.
Yes.
Fairness.
Yeah, it's a great tool, I think, here in Waterloo Region. Okay, so let's get to this
Lindsay.
Case. Lindsay,
sure.
Yes. Okay, so should we talk first, I suppose, about let's talk about the claims. Harassment, intentional inflection of nervous shock, negligence, and constructive dismissal. Now, there's a lot in there, so should we start at the beginning with harassment?
Well, sure.
Okay.
Anybody who heard that tape certainly knows what was meant by harassment. And then if you read the rest of the story in the statement of claim about what happened to her after that inquisition, it didn't get much better. She had difficulty with her next two professors as well. And they didn't treat her in a way that, well, one would want to be treated.
So that's
the harassment.
That's the harassment. Okay, so and after that initial incident, I don't know if that's the right word, but that's the one I'll use, where she recorded the conversation as she was being reprimanded for showing this clip from TVO about the discussion on gender neutral pronouns. She recorded that conversation. Of course, the tape of that conversation gets released, and the university apologizes. Now they say they've taken numerous measures to address the matter, including the apology to her. They had an independent review, which found no wrongdoing on the part of Lindsay Shepherd. Offered recommendations.
Yes, which the president refused to acknowledge at the time. When asked on TVO by Steve Paikin, are you saying that Lindsay Shepherd did anything wrong? She just kept docking and dodging and weaving and would not answer the question. In other words, she would not acknowledge she did nothing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It took a fact-finding before she'd say she did something wrong. The apology is at best disingenuous. And look, if you don't have these non-apology apologies, it was one of those. They're all de rigueur these days, but you apologize without actually apologizing. I'm sorry if you were offended.
Right.
A heartfelt
right.
apology.
Right.
As if there's something wrong with a person for being offended in the first place rather than wrong with the perpetrator of the abuse.
Well, that's interesting because that's a very leftist kind of thing to say, Mr. Levitt. Oh, and I totally agree
really?
With you, by the way.
Well, I'm certainly not leftist.
I know. That's why, I mean, like, I think that, you know, that that apologizing just to, or I'm sorry you're offended, like a disingenuous, you know, sorry you're offended kind of thing.
Why do you think that's a leftist thing to say? I would think the opposite, partly because I am right wing and that's my perspective.
Well, I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why, because I think as, you know, leftists. We get accused of apologizing to everyone all the time and probably not meaning it, just doing it to kind of, you know, kind of calm the waters or perhaps
like Trudeau's
just
apologies for sure.
I wasn't going to bring it up, but yes, that's exactly kind of that's where my mind went when you said that.
But I'm a right winger saying those are improper apologies. That's the point.
Gotcha.
The right wing would think that's inappropriate. The left wing do it.
Right. Okay.
So it is not a left-wing thing to say.
Tell me what intentional infliction of nervous shock means from a legal standpoint.
Just translate nervous shock to mental stress.
Okay.
Intentional inflicting mental stress. It's just a legal expression.
Okay. Now, she in the case, it says that the attacks on her, I guess I should say the alleged attacks, have rendered her unemployable in academia. So are we in a situation where Lindsay Shepherd has applied for jobs and not received them?
I cannot speak to that. I don't know if she's applied. Her view is, from whatever feedback she's getting, including from academia, that she's won't be employable at this point in light of what's occurred. So I can't be more specific than that because I don't have more information than that. But I know that that is her perspective. And let's face it, she has lots of interactions and discussions with academia, including those that are very favorable to her cause. And that's the feedback she's got.
Right. Okay. So but we don't know that she has been rejected for her views, so to speak, or not even I guess it would be rejected for her views, right? I mean, that's the bottom line here.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Or being seen to be too much of an advocate or someone that isn't particularly docile, as opposed to, it might be that, or it may be her views.
Interesting point on the Facebook page I was referencing from Next Gen Waterloo Region that someone mentioned that I thought was interesting, and I'll see what you say to that. Howard Levitt is our guest. He's Lindsay Shepherd's lawyer, and we're discussing the case this morning. She has filed a lawsuit against Wilfrid Laurier this past Tuesday. Now, this is a comment I'd like your response to. Someone said, I think she's probably unemployable at this point, but not because of anything Wilfrid Laurier did to her, and not even because of her controversial beliefs. She's demonstrated that she thrives on conflict and needs to be the center of attention, and those aren't characteristics that many employers want to introduce into their workplaces.
But isn't that exactly what one would want? Maybe that's exaggerating to make a point, but isn't it exactly what one would want in academia? A fearless advocate, like, for example, Jordan Peterson, since he's not exactly unrelated to this case.
Mm-hmm.
Fearless, outspoken, not someone who succumbs to social pressure. That's what academic freedom and tenure is supposed to be all about, for example. And if that renders somebody unemployable, well, that says a lot about academia. Remember, we're not talking about an office suite. We're talking about academia.
Right. Yeah, right. Okay. But don't we need the proof that she is unemployable before she says she's unemployable?
Well, look, you never have proof until a claim is over. And that's going to be some time away. But at the end of the day, you have experts who talk about it at trial. You have other professors. You have people who are hiring committees. You have people who are experts in these things. You don't have to remember the case. She's only a few months out of the situation. You can't wait 5 years to sue to develop that evidence, because by then you're past any limitation period.
So what happens next? How does this unfold then? The lawsuit has been filed. What happens next, and how quickly do we see this into a courtroom?
The university files a defense, and then the next step would be examination for discovery, probably in 6 or 8 months. And then the next step after that, in which each side examines the others after exchanging all of their documents. And what happens after that is that there's a pretrial before a judge who tries to give their views of the case. That might be in a year and a half or more. And then, depending how quickly the justice system works in the Waterloo region, which I can't speak to particularly yet, and then you have a trial. And I get a chance to cross-examine Rambukana and Joel and Pimlott about what they were thinking that day.
Mm-hmm.
And their background, what led them to behave so well. I think I'll let my statement of claim speak for itself in terms of how I view them as having behaved.
Is there precedent here? What sort of cases is it? There's nothing.
Well, there's precedent in terms of what the tort of harassment is, what the tort of intentional infliction of nervous shock, what the tort of negligence is. There's harassment in that generic way, but I've never heard of a case like this with these sorts of facts. But then again, even from a political perspective, have you ever heard of a case like this with these particular facts?
No.
It's pretty outrageous.
Yeah,
no, exactly.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's the beauty of the law in the Commonwealth and in the British common law, you know, including in the United States. It develops to meet new situations. It's endlessly elastic.
That's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think that's good. Yeah. It is a controversial and compelling case. And again, it is, it has got wonderful conversations, I think. If anything, I appreciate the conversations and the perspectives that it's bringing to light and onto the airwaves, into the newspapers. I think it's going to be quite interesting to follow. And Howard Leavitt, we'd love to have you on again if we could as it progresses.
Glad to.
Thank you.
Always enjoy talking to you.
Thank you. You too, sir. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. Now, I would invite these phone lines to start ringing right now at star 570 at 519-570-2545. As I mentioned, some very interesting conversations by people who are much smarter than I could ever hope to be. Happening online right now, and they're really quite eye-opening and interesting. Again, the conversation I'm referring to that was happening this morning is it's a closed group. It is called Next Gen Waterloo Region. I quite enjoy the group. I don't comment frequently, but I certainly read a lot of the comments. What I think is interesting here, what I think is interesting is, I don't think that actually the situation with Lindsay Shepherd at Laurier is what's making her unemployable, to use her words. I don't think that's what it is. I think it's the way she's aligned herself, after the fact, that is perhaps making people, if she has applied for jobs, we don't know that. Her lawyer just said that. If she's applied for jobs and been denied those jobs, I don't think it was the original situation at Laurier that was the catalyst. I think it's what's happened afterward. Her Twitter feed is interesting. Sometimes I'm convinced she's a staunch right-wing conservative, and other times I find her to be quite forward-thinking as I read through. But my thought is that aligning herself afterward with the people and the groups that she has, trying to bring Faith Goldie in, the abortion discussion that she was going to have held at Laurier, a lot of those discussions that got shut down by people. I think that she keeps kind of being guilty by association with the types of people she's encouraging to have a platform with. And I hope I'm saying that correctly. Because here's the thing. I align myself, if you listen to the show, you know this. I align myself with socialist ideas, with left-thinking people. And so I am sometimes deemed to be a snowflake or a feminazi or what have you. But I accept that because I've aligned myself with those people. But she kind of does it in the shadow of, oh, I'm just giving people a platform. I don't feel like it's honest, I suppose. And that's just how I'm feeling. We have a lot of phone calls on Lindsay Shepherd and this lawsuit waiting at star 570-519-570-2545. We're going to get to those. We'll take a break and come back with you next on 570 News.
Every pitch. Best you'll ever see. Every hit. Every play. Every game.
Come on!
Follow the Toronto Blue Jays through all 162.
An incredible catch!
570 News, your home for Toronto Blue Jays baseball.
Oh, thank you, Polly. Spirit booster. All right, so we just had Howard Leavitt on, who is the lawyer for Lindsay Shepherd. She is suing Wilfrid Laurier University, claiming attacks have rendered her unemployable in academia. We have reached out. 570 News did reach out to Lindsay Shepherd for comment. That phone call was not returned. Obviously, her lawyer was speaking on behalf of Ms. Shepherd there. I do need to read you the statement from Wilfrid Laurier University that they did provide to us here at 570 News. Wilfrid Laurier University has received notice of Lindsay Shepherd's statement of claim, which is one perspective of a legal matter issued in pursuit of a financial claim. Laurier will vigorously defend against the statement of this claim. Laurier remains dedicated to its core values, which include a commitment to intellectual inquiry, critical reflection, and scholarly integrity, while striving to be a supportive and inclusive community. Since Ms. Shepherd first raised her initial concerns, the university has taken numerous measures to address the matter, including issuing an apology to Ms. Shepherd. That apology still stands. The university initiated an independent review, which found no wrongdoing on the part of Ms. Shepherd and offered concrete recommendations to the university for next steps. Many of those steps have already been taken, including training, a review and update of university policies, and the establishment of a task force that prepared a statement on freedom of expression, which was approved by the Senate of Wilfrid Laurier University and endorsed by the university's Board of Governors. The vast majority of Laurier students have an overwhelmingly positive experience at this university, which is reflected in the fact that Laurier has ranked number one in student satisfaction among Canadian universities in its category in the McLean's University rankings for the past 2 years. That's a statement from Wilfrid Laurier. What's the statement from you, Star 570 Bill? You are first.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Go ahead.
Well, you know, I think with all the experiences I've had, and I haven't followed this case too much. I know a little bit about it. To me, it's academia, and forgive me, but the left, it's just complete hypocrisy. They're always, always crying inclusion and, tolerance. But the only time that they tolerate things, as long as you line up with their ideas and beliefs. And I mean, we talk about religious and all this different things, and we say separation of church and state. You can't impose your beliefs or religious beliefs on a group of people. That's to keep for yourself. But they do the same thing, just not under the form of religion. It's a certain part of a people or elite or whatever you want to call it that decide that we have the moral correctness. And if you don't think this, then then you're treated poorly. And I've experienced it. And I really do keep an open mind. I'm always wanting to learn. I want to understand. And, you know, I never harsh stance. But there's been times, and I could tell them to you, where just complete, not tolerance. And they're always crying tolerance, but I'm sorry, Dan, but like, you guys tolerate as long as you line up with your beliefs. And that's what I found time and time again. And this is just another example.
Okay.
And to me, they're doing exactly what churches tried to do within the government or whatever, religious. They're doing the same thing. It's just not under the title of religion.
Right.
And okay. I think it's disgusting.
Yeah. Okay, Bill, and I appreciate your call. I'm not trying to hurry you along. I'm going to get to the next call in just a second. And I'm going to go back to the these smart people who I enjoyed reading about their thoughts on this morning. Someone wrote, political correctness is often used as a guise to debate first order rights, like whether or not trans people deserve rights or whether or not the Holocaust happened. Free speech is not without consequence. I mean, that I would agree with. But that's where I think the left and the right differ. Because once you started saying, well, I don't agree with homosexuality or I don't agree with people being transgendered, well, then you are infringing on someone else's rights. So I think that the left believes you can do whatever you want as long as you don't trample on someone else's rights. So is it that she's coming in again? I find her thinly veiled. Oh, I'm just offering another opinion. But why is that opinion always about whether or not trans people should have rights? Why is it always detrimental to the LGBTQ community? Why is it always detrimental to Indigenous people? Alex, you're next. Go ahead.
Yeah, if I understood what you said after you talked to the lawyer, you basically said that it's her views and it's her people that she has dialogue with, which would stop her from getting a job. If I was the lawyer, I would play that in the courtroom, quite honestly, because you just proved her point and his point. Because of her views, she's not to be employed because she has the wrong views. I don't know if you guys, I think someday you'll wake up and realize what you've done, but you've ceded the right to free speech to the conservatives and to the right, and you're losing people by droves. That's why the conservatives won the last election. That's why they'll probably win the federal election. That's why they'll win out in Alberta. That's why Donald Trump won. You are attacking one of the bedrocks of Western civilization, which is free speech. And you know what? someone could say something to me and it's offensive to me. Well, that's fine. You've said something that's offensive. If you hit me, that's different. But if you say something that I find offensive, mm-hmm. that is considered free speech. And you do not believe in free speech. And I find that just completely ironic.
No, I certainly do,
you are
Alex.
A talk show host on the radio.
Alex, let's have a conversation because I have 30 seconds. Polly's going to cut us off. I absolutely believe in free speech unless it infringes on the basic human rights of someone else.
There, you just proved my point. I believe in free speech, full stop. The left used to say, I abhor what you say, but I will defend to you, to my death the right to say it.
I absolutely will. As long as there's equality for all of the human beings.
No, you do not.
I do, Alex. Got to go. I mean, he's going to get mad at me and tell me I hung up on him because I didn't like what he said, which is, I mean, neither here nor there. We're just out of time. So should we come back to this later? I'm so sorry, Dylan, you're lined up and I can't get to it. So maybe we should have done more time on it. And we certainly will. We'll have Howard Levitt back on. We'll continue the conversations with you guys. And we'll also keep reaching out to Lindsay Shepherd as well. It is time for Jeff Pickle to come into this chair for Mike Farwell. He is pumped and excited. He's got his fancy shirt on, probably fancy socks too, if I know Jeff Pickle. That's next here on 570 News.